Milwaukee Banks and Pluto Bounce on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name's Trent, that's Mark, and we are the Dice Men, and we cometh on this show, oddly enough, called the Dice Men Cometh. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
No, you're not. You've been flat out. You've been moving house.
I have been moving house.
That sucks.
Yeah, particularly because I haven't moved my games yet. They're still in the old cupboard.
Oh, no.
That's this weekend. I have to be careful with the precious.
You've actually got quite the collection too, haven't you?
I've got 100 or so games, I guess. It's not really a large collection when you think about that DVD we saw about game collectors where one couple had 17,000 games.
And no life.
Yes. Let's talk about what we've been playing.
I'm surprised you've had time to play anything.
Oh, look, I squeezed in a couple. Funny thing was, I squeezed in a game of a couple of games that we talked about last week, Love Letter and Gauntlet of Fools, which is great. Both went down really well.
Both very short, fast games.
Yeah, that's right. And either side of this major game that I'm going to talk about tonight, which is called World Without End. Some people might say it's a game without end. It's designed by Michael Reinick and Stefan Stadler. It has this fantastic art by Michael Menzel, who is a brilliant board game board designer, and you know his games when you see them because the art is amazing.
I was watching you play this at the Hobart Game Society, and it is a very, very pretty looking board.
It is, absolutely. And you might know the name World Without End. It's actually based on the book by Ken Follett. Now, of course, Ken Follett wrote a famous book, Pillars of the Earth, about the
building a church?
Yeah, that's right, in the sort of 12th, 13th century in England. And World Without End was the sequel to that, where 200 years later in the city of Kingsbridge, what's going on there? And so there's actually a game of the Pillars of the Earth book, which is a great little worker placement game, a Euro game, where you're building stuff, funnily enough. So in World Without End, things are happening and the plague has hit the town. You know, you're paying your taxes to the king. It's one of those Euro games where you're just struggling to make ends meet from turn to turn. Most of your time and energy goes into actually getting enough together to pay the king at the end of the round, and then you've got nothing left over.
Is there any kind of interaction between the players with this one, or is it more just about managing your resources?
Yeah, it's
trying not to get bitten by a rat.
It is a bit like that. You are... I need to move my microphone around because I'm not even looking at you. You are managing a hand of 12 cards where you can pick 6 actions each turn. Mm. So it's really a choice of, well, I've got 6 of these 12 things I can do and 6 that I'm not going to do. And it's deciding what's the best way to use those things to make victory points. It sounds dry, but it's quite tight. With the three of us, it only ran just over an hour. Not a lot of interaction, but quite fun in a Euro way.
Okay, that sounds like something for the serious gamer.
Yes.
Okay, well, look, the stuff that I've been playing is right over on the opposite side.
All right.
I played a game called Nuns on the Run.
Nuns on the Run?
Yeah.
It sounds like it should go...
It's kind of, it's in that Benny Hill sort of Monty Python sort of... You remember the nuns in Castle Anthrax in Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Yes.
It's a little bit like that. But look, it's good, clean fun. We're talking about novice nuns, children, okay, who sneak out of their room at night in the not the dormitory. What do you... Is it a rectory?
Could be.
A nunnery. Get thee to a nunnery. Right, sneaking out at night to go and find your secret wish, and it might be a...
Bottle of beer?
Or, a love letter.
Oh.
Bottle of altar wine, maybe, or a cake, and sneaking back to your through the corridors to your room without being caught by the nuns who are patrolling the grounds.
The patrolling nuns.
Yeah. Look, it's not a great game, okay, but it's enjoyable enough.
There was certainly a lot of cackling coming from the table that I heard.
It's very silly. Look, it's very unbalanced. A really, really badly written rule book, which, you know, just cripples a game when the rules aren't together. They haven't been proofread by someone outside the game development circle, you know, to make sure it actually makes sense.
And isn't it one of those games where the vast majority of players aren't actually don't appear on the board anywhere because they're moving in secret?
It's like an invisible Pac-Man in reverse. So the nuns are moving around on the board, and they're recording in secret the numbers of the spaces that they're moving to on the board. So you've got to rely on people being trustworthy because there is scope for cheating. And meanwhile, the nuns are moving around trying to see if they can get within in the vicinity of those secret positions.
Yeah.
It's really unbalanced. I think it's really hard for the nuns to actually win.
Yes.
But look, one thing I will say for it, it plays up to 8 players.
Oh, there's not many games that play that many, actually.
Exactly. And if you can get to 8, then you have 2 players being the nuns.
Yeah.
Up to 7, it's just 1 player. And I think that player basically has to be the guy who takes one for the team and is happy to run the game and talk everybody else through with it. There's actually an expansion for it that I've got that I haven't sort of put into the game yet. So it adds a third villain, some kind of mad monk who patrols the corridors as well. But look, that should tell you everything about it right there. If they've just arbitrarily put a third one of these villains into the game, it should tell you they're not really thinking too much about it actually being balanced.
Yeah, okay, nuns on the run too. Nuns go faster.
Look, a complicated rule book that makes it all seem much harder than it really is, but for some reason just still, you know, good, clean Monty Python sort of fun and lots of, oh, you naughty little girl.
Oh, I heard a noise in the corridor. Who farted?
Now, speaking of which, I warn you, I've had a huge curry before coming into the studio tonight. So, look, anything could happen.
Open the window.
We better just keep it together long enough for Adam Walker to come in here from Adam Walker Studios. He's been running this Kickstarter for Viking Horde Papercraft.
Yeah.
Origami Viking ships that you play with on the floor from right here in Hobart.
It sounds amazing. It looks amazing too.
And we're going to talk about that in a little while here on The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. And if you don't know what we're talking about with Kickstarter, well, we'll explain that next. The local lads, scientists of modern music on Edge Radio 99.3. The Dice Man Cometh talking tabletop gaming with Trent and Mark tonight, and Adam Walker, whose Kickstarter Viking Horde Papercraft has just gone great guns. But what is this Kickstarter, I hear you ask?
What is this Kickstarter, Trent?
Well, I mean, do we really need to actually explain this? Surely everybody's figured out Kickstarter and what this actually means by now.
Well, look, let's just cover it briefly. So Kickstarter is basically a crowdfunding platform for people who've got a great idea, they want to get it out there to the world and produce it.
Sure, it cuts out the middleman, it cuts out the record company. If there's a band that you like, you can actually sort of provide your money straight to them to help get them on tour or release an album, make a t-shirt, whatever. And controversially, a few sort of bigger stars, people like Amanda Palmer, of course very popular here in Tassie, has kickstarted a couple of projects on there, and she cops a bit of flack for being fairly high profile and still using Kickstarter, even when it's supposed to be for struggling artists or developers or creators who don't have the funds at their disposal.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things is I've actually funded a, not personally, but as one of the backers, of a Kate Miller Heidke album.
Okay.
And she's doing it because she wanted to get away from the label and have full creative control.
Okay, so this actually allows her to be independent.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, look, so Kickstarter has completely transformed the board gaming industry, also with video games, perhaps board gaming even more so. And Kickstarter has just launched in Australia, which means Australian projects can get on their site as of this November. So far, since November, about 2,000 projects have launched in Australia. Now, the way it actually works, mate, do you know how much, what kind of cut that Kickstarter takes?
I believe it's 10%.
5%.
5%,
well,
is it?
5% for Kickstarter, for up to 5% for Amazon, because they process all the payments that you make. So they get their fair share, but the creator maintains all the rights. Kickstarter offers no guarantee on any of these deals as well, because there's have been quite a few projects that have gone a bit sour and the creators haven't actually delivered what they said they would. Kickstarter doesn't consider itself liable or to have any responsibility with that at all. A little bit controversial there. But this hasn't stopped them delivering, well, servicing some huge projects. Just a quick look at the top 10 biggest projects ever on Kickstarter, and this is going to give you some idea about how big this is for the video game and board game industry. The biggest project they've ever had is the Pebble Watch. Okay, that watch that links into your iPhone.
Yes.
Yeah, that raised over $10 million US. Now, number two was the Ouija video game console. That raised $8.5 million. Number three was the Veronica Mars movie.
Okay, we all heard
about this, you know, resurrecting the old series. That was $5.5 million. That movie actually comes out in March, I believe, in cinemas. Now, numbers four, five, and six in the Kickstarter top 10 projects of all time, they're all video games. Number seven is in our board gaming world. That's for gaming miniatures, Reaper miniatures. Now, these, it's not a board game as such. They're just little, well, they're toys. Let's call them what they are. They're little sculpted models of gaming miniatures that you can use in your Dungeons & Dragons and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that was, this was absolutely amazing, wasn't it? It raised millions of dollars.
$3.5 million US. Yeah,
for miniatures. And it was one of those ones where the, what do they call it, the stretch goals just got bigger and crazier and more amazing.
Yeah, give us more money and we'll give you these stretch goals, which are just more and more stuff that people who donate can get.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But the biggest board game success on Kickstarter so far has been Zombicide, which should come as no surprise that it would be a zombie game.
Of course,
it's absolutely all the rage in board gaming right now, just games involving zombies.
Well, it ticked all the boxes because it was a board game, it had zombies, and it had miniatures.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it seems that anything with miniatures on Kickstarter goes berserk.
And it looks gorgeous. Yeah. It's incredible artwork. I've not played it. It looks a bit messy to me. It doesn't look like a sort of streamlined gaming system.
It does look like one of those bloated Ameritrash things where you've got modular boards everywhere, you've got umpteen zillion plastic miniatures, and it can go for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, so that raised nearly $2.5 million. Now, a couple of projects that we've backed, Two Rooms and a Boom. That's a Kickstarter that's just wrapped up.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on.
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's a game that plays up to 40 or 50 people, I think it is off the top of my head.
6 to 30.
To 30.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's all to do with hidden roles and... look, we'll explain a little bit later in the show
when we talk
about that.
One of the other ones, obviously, we talked about it the other week, Nothing Personal is a Kickstarter game.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's been a couple of big disasters as well in the Kickstarter board gaming world. Just recently, somebody tried to resurrect the HeroQuest property. And that turned into a bit of a dispute about exactly who had the rights in which country. That whole Kickstarter got taken down pretty much as quickly as it was put up. And the other big one was the Doom that came to Atlantic City.
Oh, yes.
Which was yet another Cthulhu game.
Theme, yeah.
Yeah. Now, that guy managed to raise like $100,000. And the creator just seems to have basically just enjoyed himself for a year on the money. So these things are not without risk. Have a look on Kickstarter if you haven't already, but buyer beware, I think. And we'll be talking more about Kickstarter with Adam Walker, who is actually just outside the door. We'll be bringing him in next here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Fantastic. You're with the Dice Men Cometh. Let's go to some music.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Keep it local.
And that was a local Tassie track, Mess of Reds, with their song Laid. You're here with the Dice Men Cometh, Trent and Mark, on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And we now have a special guest with us.
Yes, joined in the studio by Adam Walker of Adam Walker Studios. That could get confusing. No, wait. Local media production company. Adam, welcome.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
You got his microphone on there, have you, Matt?
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay, sorry. Adam, we're bringing you in here to talk about your Kickstarter, Viking Horde Papercraft. But we ask everybody this before we get started. What have you been playing lately? Are you a gamer?
Yeah, definitely a gamer. It'd be a bit insane to do a project about gaming if you're not a gamer. I've been playing Dominion. Well, last Saturday night was Dominion, Ticket to Ride.
Oh, God, train games.
Yes.
And Taboo,
I've not played Taboo.
The sex game, is it?
Not that Taboo. One of those nights, is it, Adam?
Yeah. Well, no, it did degenerate, but not in that way.
We promised no pussy jokes anyway.
Oh, God. Yeah, that'd be a first for us. So, Kickstarter, Viking Horde Papercraft, it is the last day of this Kickstarter today.
Yes. Oh, on Friday about lunchtime, we finish up.
So, oh, is that right? Okay.
It's basically, if people want to get involved, tomorrow is really your only chance. It's really, I describe it as a very niche project, but it's sort of a fusion of quite a few things that we are into in the studio, which is games, of course, papercraft.
Mm.
It actually arose out of a an iOS Android game that we're developing.
Yep.
So it's a sort of a really bizarre origin story where it goes from a computer graphics 3D game. And then my...
Because you guys make apps and, yeah. and you've made short films and
yeah,
computer animation. And
yeah. Quite a bit of stuff. So yeah. We kind of... Mainly digital animation is the backbone of the business.
Mm.
I suppose we do a lot of different stuff. So, like, we've done Papercraft for people as well. But Papercraft has almost always been just as a pleasure, fun thing.
Yeah, so say, how did you get into Papercraft? Is it something you did in the lunch break in your office?
No, I think it goes back a long time. I started building the Titanic with my dad. I think it's certainly never been finished. It's sitting up there, I think, at their house, half finished. But I think since then, I've always had a bit of a passion. I remember we went as a family to Europe in the 80s, and there was these very cool paper ships
yes.
that you got, and they're amazing. I sort of never actually tried to make any of them, but hey, nowadays you get cutters and everything
yeah,
a little bit quicker.
Exactly.
So.
And these are pre-cut Viking longships that you build yourself without glue, apparently.
Yeah.
How complicated are these things?
They're complicated to design. We spent a long time making the prototypes and then refining them. The idea that basically drives the design is an accessible miniatures game.
Mm.
So it's like painting miniatures, but without actually having to spend hours or days on a single miniature. So
that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of... It has excited a whole bunch of people because of the idea of the sort of... You get to play beautiful games making with beautiful miniatures. Well, they're not really that miniature. They're quite big.
Mm.
And then you also sort of, you get to build them as well. So the biggest kind of complaint that we've got from those sort of people is how do we store them? Because they end up being quite big.
I was kind of wondering that myself. Like, you're going to drop $100 on a whole fleet of Viking longships. What do? Do I unfold them and then put them back together when I want to play? No, I don't think so.
Well, they're very pretty.
Yeah.
So, well, pretty. Hey, wrong word for Viking longships. Very pretty. Yeah, so they're very, they're quite attractive as ornaments. I certainly think they would kind of stand up sitting on the top shelf of your gaming library.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about the day-to-day running of a Kickstarter like this, because I've heard tell that it's pretty much a full-time job.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. You get a lot of questions and, like, what's this configuration?
Right.
A lot of the stuff that you don't really ever see if you're not a creator as opposed to a backer. So you spend a lot of time answering those questions and resolving issues, and also just a lot of time trying to get the product out there, trying to create new stuff to get people intrigued by the next stage. And
managing those stretch goals. And
yeah, it's sort of that seems to be quite an established paradigm for the actual Kickstarter model, which is basically you have the minimum threshold to make the project work, and for ours that was $3,500. And then you kind of just have all these extra goals that you keep on aiming for to try to get more and more stuff.
Which includes the Kraken.
Yes.
I see. Mm, so this is the Papercraft giant octopus.
It is the Kraken!
Which I'm dying to see.
It is pretty impressive. It, of course, is totally at odds with it being a Norse game.
hey, never let that stop.
We have a few issues that... Vikings almost never fought each other on boats. But hey, it's a game. It's sort of, there's a few stretches of the imagination.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it looks like a lot of fun. So look, it's been funded, so the project will be delivered, but there's still time for people to get on board. Just go on to Kickstarter.com and Viking Horde Papercraft.
Yep. Certainly, we're also offering a whole bunch of unofficial bonuses for locals as well, like Hobarts. Like, if you pick it up, you basically get your postage in free stuff.
Okay. Yes.
Fantastic.
All right. Adam, thank you very much for coming in, man, and congratulations on the Kickstarter. And I look forward to seeing the next one. Is that going to be like ninjas in boats or Egyptians, Greeks maybe?
No, we've definitely got ideas, but they're all secret squirrel.
Okay. Good stuff. Thanks again, man.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. And you're with the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio. Here's a song for all those people that have been unsuccessfully playing Flashmen Fire Rescue.
Hi.
You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
Oh, you sound smooth.
Oh, how can I come out of that loud? That was Hey Now by London Grammar, a fabulous band who are coming out to Australia very shortly, I think, but I won't talk about youth music because I'm just going to be out of my depth. Before that, we had My Sort of Music. We had They Might Be Giants from their 2013 release, Nanobots. That was Heads on Fire.
I knew if I let you push the buttons tonight that you would put a They Might Be Giants track on. I just knew it.
Hey, well, they were here earlier in the year. You and I went and saw them. Don't tell anyone.
It was a bit
of a dance. It was a great time.
Yeah, you could have dropped a bomb on that concert and blown up half the nerd population of the city.
Absolutely. It was fantastic. Mm. Anyway, let's get back to talking about games, Trent. So you've been playing, and you want to talk about a fantastic game.
Yeah, well, look, we actually mentioned this in one of our Christmas gift ideas last week for Christmas gift ideas for the gamer. If they haven't yet played this game, then they should. Race for the Galaxy.
Oh, yes.
I think this is easily one of the best games out there, but it's interesting, and I want to talk about it a little bit because it's almost a textbook example of just milking an idea dry and trying to suck money from out of your audience. Now, this originally came out in 2007. It's designed by a guy called Tom Lehman, who some kind of well-known game designer. I'm not really aware of it.
Yeah, and brother of Boof.
Boof Lehman.
Yeah, the Australian cricket coach.
No.
Yeah, it
no.
must be.
No.
Cousin to Peter.
Peter Lehman.
Yeah. They're a very clever family.
Anyway, Race for the Galaxy, very complicated game, so I can't really sort of do the rules justice here. But basically what you're trying to do when you're playing it is you're trying to build an intergalactic empire.
Intergalactic planetary.
And you've got to earn more points than your opponents as you go through this. Now, this means what it means is that players have a hand of cards that represent planets and corporations and technology and various sort of sci-fi social things. And you play those onto the table in front of you to build your empire, and the game ends when somebody gets their 12th card down.
In their tableau.
That's right, but it's not necessarily the first player to get the 12th card down, it's whoever's got the most points.
Yeah, that's right.
At that point. Now, every card that you put down has a cost for playing it, and the cost is a number of cards that you have to burn. So you have to discard X number of cards to play a particular card that you want. So you constantly got this sort of decision: do I need to play this? Can I afford this right now? Do you want to burn every single card in your hand to put down this one that maybe will benefit you? And even worse, all the cards have special powers. Mm. Mostly that's to get you even more cards to burn. So the conundrum is, it can just paralyze you with indecision. But that's not all. Each player also has an entirely different set of cards, your action cards, which represent a range of things that you can do. And each turn you only get to choose just one of these actions. And of course, the thing is, when you choose that action, you get a little bonus for doing it. But everybody who's playing gets to do that action as well.
And that's the beauty, I think, of this game, is trying to say, well, I want to build a planet this turn, but I think Bob might be going to build a planet, so I won't play the build a planet
card. That's right, because I'll be able to do it for free on his go anyway.
And then Bob doesn't build a planet, and you curse Bob loudly, and you don't get to do anything that you wanted to do on that turn because you counted on being able to build a planet first before you could turn the resources that the planet develops into other stuff and cards and victory points, and so your whole cardboard pyramid falls apart and you curse.
Yeah, so that's if you want to settle a planet. You can also explore, which is literally just drawing more cards from the central deck that everybody's drawing from. So everybody's just getting random cards into their hand, and you're just going to try and make the best out of what it is that you're getting. Now, if you explore, for example, you get to keep a few more of those cards, but everybody gets to do it. There's some other actions like develop, which means putting some of those technologies and corporations onto the table. Consume, which lets you use the goods and resources that planets give you to get still more cards. Produce, to get more of those goods. And every player chooses their actions simultaneously, and every player does all these actions simultaneously. So you can have, I think it's up to 6 or 7 players
now. Yeah, 6 players with the expansion.
Yeah, and everybody's just doing everything at the same time, so it actually moves quite quickly.
Yeah, but now, speaking of expansions, tell us why the next expansion is bound to have a Jump the Shark planet in it.
There's been, I think, 3-4 expansions for this so far.
I think there's 3 for this for the first round, and then this new one that's come out now, which is like a whole new standalone, reinvent the wheel sort of thing.
Yeah, in 2008, there was a thing called The Gathering Storm, which had 18 cards in it. In 2009, there was a thing called Rebel versus Imperium. In 2010, there was The Brink of War, and they gave you a few more cards, but they also added in all these rule complexities. Mm. And one of the big criticisms of Race for the Galaxy has always been that you don't actually get to interact with other players really that much. So they tried to bring in a way for you to do that start to steal other people's planets, and it just didn't work. Yeah. It killed the game flat, made it what's already a very complicated game far too complicated, and I don't know anyone who actually plays with those rules.
Yeah, I played with it once, and after that never played with that option again. Right. It's just a dud.
So there's another expansion coming out for this thing now. It's like, let's just milk this dry and see, because the fan base for this game is rabid, okay? Yeah. They love it, and they'll buy anything that comes out. So actually in 2010 a reboot was announced called Roll for the Galaxy, which apparently added dice to this, or maybe
it's a completely separate game, but it's a dice game, yeah.
But it's never come out. It's never seen the light of day.
Roll
for the Galaxy never been released. So instead what they're doing now very shortly is releasing this thing called Race for the Galaxy Alien Artifacts, completely incompatible with all the other expansions. It's effectively a reboot. And if you look at this thing, that actually adds a little map. You've got to go around a ruined spaceship trying to gather up these artifacts like those idiot astronauts in Prometheus. It's just really turning me off. I just wish... Just stop, guys. Tom, talk to the guys at Rio Grande. Stop.
Yeah.
Okay? That's enough.
Okay. Speaking of that's enough, it's time for some more music. You're with the Dice Men Cometh.
But it's a great
Edge
game.
Radio 99.3.
Edge Radio, supporting Tassie music.
You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I'm Mark, this is Trent, and that was Drowsy by Catsuit, another Tassie band. And I think that's how some Euro games make you feel, Trent.
That'd be about right.
Now, we were going to talk about large group games, but there's another elephant in the room this week that's left over from last week.
What?
James Bond and your game.
I thought you were going to forget about it.
Never. So, where are you at with this amazing game that we've been waiting to hear about?
So, this was the challenge to design a James Bond game, and this was to try and address what is a perceived lack of a good espionage game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, where are all the good James Bond games?
Yeah, well, actually, there's a few of them on eBay at the moment. If you just hop onto eBay and just type in James Bond board game, there's a whole bunch of games from, like, the 60s and 70s, you know, Thunderball, Goldfinger-themed games that are on there for sale at the moment.
I think the fact that they're on eBay says it all.
Yeah, and they're not really up with the times. I think they're pretty much just kind of roll-and-move games. So, look, I've kind of had two ideas. I mean, you could do it as a living card game model, the way Netrunner's working at the moment. And so Netrunner is a game that only has two players. You basically have one good guy, one bad guy. So you have one player playing MI6, the other player playing Spectre, and you're deploying your various agents and plots against each other. So it's an asymmetrical card game. It's a model that's working for this game, Netrunner, really, really well at the moment. But I think actually, really, what you want to do is something a little bit more different than that, though, and get more players involved. So, so my idea for a James Bond game, should anyone be so kind as to actually buy me the rights to it, is to do it as a living card game, but to have all the players as 00 agents working semi-cooperatively.
Yeah, I had a thought about a semi-cooperative game where you play not James Bond, not even agents, but those sort of support people in the back end.
Yeah, okay. So you want to play? Would you really want to be Moneypenny?
Yeah,
in a game,
or Felix, or Q.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look. So you're playing a character from the James Bond universe, be it a 00 agent or one of these other supporting players. Now, every player has to choose a deck of, let's say, I don't know, 40 cards. All right, from a choice of a lot more. So you're actually designing a deck to bring into a game. And you're playing up against a central antagonist and other characters represented by a central neutral deck. So you choose your gadgets, you choose your friends, your outfits, your vehicles, and it's all based on what you think is going to be in this central deck.
Yeah.
All right. So the central deck is the theme of the game. So that might be, say, For Your Eyes Only.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like, oh, gee, I only bought my...
Octopussy.
I only bought my Hawaiian... Man, I just knew you were going to... That's three shows for three. You've dropped the P word, Mark. Three shows for three.
I was brought up in the Mrs. Slocum era. What can I say?
So if you're going to be playing, say, in the Bahamas and you packed some skis in your deck, then, you know, you really are up the proverbial creek.
Well, you could wrap them around someone's neck, though.
True enough.
In the true James Bond way.
Yeah, so you flip over, let's say, five cards from the central deck, and there might be some locations in that. There might be some beautiful girls. Mm. And then each player has to pick one of those cards to beat. Maybe you've got to roll a dice or two. I think a combination of dice and cards is always good. And the winning challenge gives you the villain card for the points, and it lets you draw some more villain cards that you can choose from, so you sort of direct the action a little bit. But it's the idea is to have all those elements from the James Bond pictures, the exotic locations and gadgets, all of them in there. And, I mean, actually, by beating some of these challenges, it would let you stack the central deck, and that becomes part of the game.
Yes.
Actually manipulating the events that are coming up. And if a really big villain comes out, you might be able to avoid him and send his card back into the deck until a later stage when maybe you're ready for him, or perhaps you might even choose to play the traitor card and go like Sean Bean in GoldenEye, right? Where he was a 00H. I think he was 006. And he turned out to be a bad guy.
Yes. And then look what happened to him. He couldn't just walk into Mordor.
No. So that way it might end up being a cooperative victory with, everybody winning, or it might be just one guy winning. But that, bam, is my brilliant idea for a James Bond card game.
There's only one problem with this James Bond board game you've designed.
Yes?
No board. Apart from the players, perhaps.
And also no game, frankly, because it's just an idea at the moment.
Hey, well, go back to the drawing board and literally draw a board. Bring us a board game next time. How about that?
Well, it doesn't need to have a board. It's got all the cards, like Race for the Galaxy that we were just talking about. That doesn't have a board. You don't necessarily need a board.
But
what's going to be on the board?
Are you going to design a board game?
What are you talking about?
Look, I want to make it challenging for you.
Oh, my God. Haven't I just responded to your challenge?
Well, maybe you can have a second challenge.
That is a gold, rolled gold idea for a James Bond board game that's going to make someone $1 million, someone who's going to be streaming this online, someone who's listening right now and saying, that's a fantastic idea that Trent's just
they
had.
They probably only have to pay $2 million for the rights. They'll be rolling in it.
Yeah, well, you'll be hearing from my lawyers.
Yeah, well, look, that's about all the time we have tonight. It's been really fun, Trent. It's been good to sit on this side of the desk for a change and have that mild panic every time it's time to play a song. But that's enough of us for this week. So tune in next week for more Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh.
And don't forget to check us out on Facebook in the meantime. Just search Dice Men Cometh. And drop us a line, maybe drop us a question, and also find out how you can join in at the Hobart Game Society each week.